Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Warning, this episode contains foul language, a story of real demonic possession, and extremely graphic content.
Listening to Keep It Weird, the podcast for all things strange, unusual, paranormal, supernatural, creepy, sticky, gross, scary, and everything in between. Each week we sit down with one of our friends and we talk about something weird. This week I was joined by my lovely co-host Lauren and our return guest Carrie Dirksen, who you first met in episode 4, Diary of a Female Serial Carrie. And we took a trip to Iowa, figuratively, of course. Last week, you heard us talk about Iowa's craziest haunted locations and one of Iowa's most prolific unsolved murders. This episode should basically be called Ashley Talks for 45 minutes because I am here today to tell you about the most thoroughly documented and massively witnessed exorcism that's taken place on U.S. soil. You're going to hear some really disturbing things in this episode. I know that you already heard the warning at the beginning, but I'm just giving you an extra heads up. There's some very gross, very scary things that happen. There are disturbing sound effects added throughout. Sorry about it. And especially if you are a religious person, you are going to hear some very unsettling things. One thing I wanted to add, without spoiling anything, I went back and researched afterwards, and the papal records do acknowledge that this exorcism did take place at the convent of the Franciscan sisters over a period of 23 days. The convent is gone now, but the controversy that surrounded it and the town of Erling, Iowa, still remains to this day. While I have you, make sure that you check out our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/keepitweirdpodcast to find ways you can donate to our show and receive mini-sodes, mini-sode episodes that are basically recaps and additions to each episode that we have with Handsome Joe, your favorite East Coaster, and newsletters and merch and all that fun stuff. Stay tuned after this episode to hear a trailer for the podcast Macabre London, the podcast about the gory, spooky, and eerie history of London. This show has covered my favorite ghoul, Spring-Heeled Jack, Charles Dickens, and even the Mole Men of London. Ooh, I didn't even know about that. But without further ado, please enjoy part 2 of our Hometown Haunts Iowa episode. And remember to always keep it weird. This going here. Hello, hello, hello. Looks good. Everyone say hello.
Hello. Hello.
Perfect.
Hi, hello, yes, hello.
Hi, hello, yes,
hola.
Hello.
Hola. Hola.
¿Cómo estás?
¿Cómo estás? Más o menos. ¿Y tú?
¿De dónde, Iowa?
Why was that the best? You even said Hola. It in the best voice. Hola, ¿de dónde, Iowa?
I don't know.
Before, it did sound like an old Spanish name.
It reminded me of the scene in Hocus Pocus where they're like, ¿dónde es biblioteca?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And they're like,
¿dónde es?
So before I get started, actually, I read this in a book that came out in 2017. It's called The Man from the Train. Bill James and Rachel McCarthy James discuss the Villisca murders as part of a much larger series of murders, which they believe were all committed by a single serial killer. They conclude the murderer was Paul Mueller and that the crime was part of a killing spree that lasted over 10 years.
Dang.
Jeez. I don't know if Paul Mueller is on this list that I have open here. I don't think I remember that name. So anyways, yeah, we should investigate Paul Mueller and see what else he's done and read this book, The Man from the Train. Interesting.
There's lots of trains in Iowa.
Confused with Girl on the Train. There's so many train books.
A lot of train books.
Okay, that's very interesting. I like it.
I'm into it too. I have like a tiny fingernail scrap. Okay. So Hometown Haunts. Here we go. So usually when we do Hometown Haunts episodes, I research the state's monsters. I'm the cryptozoologist.
You're the cryptid girl.
I'm the crypto queen of the group.
Ooh, can that be your new nickname?
Iowa. Yeah, I like that. Crypto Queen. Iowa is actually really light on monsters.
There's not much going on. I would think there'd be things there.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking it could be because of the terrain. There's not really a lot of places monsters can hide.
But the cornfields.
Well, yeah, there's all that corn. There is a lot of corn.
Amongst the hills, the rolling foothills.
The rolling foothills. There's not a lot of caves, caverns.
No, that's true.
Heavily wooded areas in Iowa. There's woods, but there's not like Bigfoot inhabited woods.
Right. Sure. Fair.
So there was, okay, so this is, there's not much to this, but there were sightings of what is essentially a freaking dragon in 2005, is crazy. But in all of Iowa, 2005, this is
too recent for me.
But in all of Iowa, only 4 people reported seeing this supposedly flying through the sky. And they were separate. They weren't all together, but it was only 4 people. They said it moved like the Chinese dragons, like slithering almost, and pretty much nothing came of it. There were reports from like the 1800s of something that sounded like a dragon, but like there's not much. Then there was the hairy woman that I read about the 1800s. And other than that, there's your typical Bigfooty type sightings, like you said, but there doesn't seem to be access to any actual firsthand accounts or detailed descriptions of the encounters. Not much to write home about. So I started looking into UFOs. And actually, statistically speaking, Iowa is a UFO hotspot.
Really?
6 reported and confirmed UFOs in 2017, as opposed to California's 15 sightings. Iowa has like 3 million people total, and California has like 40 million people total. Yeah. So like that's a lot of confirmed UFO sightings.
Right. Yeah.
But despite that, that it's a hotspot, there also really aren't many documented firsthand accounts there either. So
damn, they're just giving you nothing.
So, I had nothing.
Where are the monsters?
Well,
sorry, weirdos.
Oh,
so I'm not going to do monsters today. Not like scaled or furry monsters. But I stumbled upon something pretty incredible. I actually found.
Do you need our help? Do you need our assistance? Okay.
So I found this. If you guys want to look at it when we're done.
What is this 50-page document you've brought out?
It's only 30...
Buckle in, weirdos, because this is a long episode.
I'm not reading it. Ashley's reading us this whole thing.
A 32-page document. So I actually found it. It's a pamphlet. And it's written by... And you can download it. There's a PDF download of this thing.
Oh, okay.
Well highlighted over there.
Oh, yeah. I went nuts.
She's studying over there.
I studied
She's
this
She's like a
shit.
Full student.
I love it.
So it's written by Reverend Celestine Kapsner, who was a Catholic priest and an exorcist stationed in Minnesota from 1928 throughout the 60s. The pamphlet is a translation of a 1928 account of an exorcism by Father Theophilus Reisinger that was originally in German. The pamphlet was originally an article written in Germany for the Catholic Church and was translated into English and transformed into a pamphlet that made its way around the United States from parish to parish as a true firsthand account of an exorcism.
Whoa.
Wow. The exorcism lasted 23 full days and was performed on a woman who was 40-something years old whose real name has been redacted, and it all happened in Erling, Iowa.
Erling?
23 days.
23
Do you know where Erling,
days.
Iowa is?
It sounds familiar, but I don't know.
I don't either. I didn't look it up. But
Erling,
this
Iowa.
Whole thing, it's the account of the priest, some of the accounts of the nuns that were involved. There was a foreword, and there's a letter from a doctor, Dr. John Dundon, who is a physician and surgeon in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Damn. It's pretty nuts. So
crazy.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So before I tell you the story of the exorcism, I have to tell you that over 40 people witnessed the events that took place and 40? Have confirmed 40 people
That's a
have
lot.
Confirmed its validity. This was 1928. Demonic possession was not in vogue at the time. We didn't sure. have the Exorcist movies or Rosemary's right. Baby. Mm-hmm. Her name has always been private, meaning she wasn't seeking some sort of national attention from okay. this.
So there's no motive to fake this.
No. Right. The church and the priest Everything that oversaw legit. And performed the ceremony, they didn't get anything out of it. They didn't right. get paid to do this. Mm-hmm. They don't get fame and fortune. There really are no winners when you fake a demonic possession in yeah. Iowa in 1928. Like, no. there's nothing
There's nothing
can
that can come out of this
at
besides
all.
That it was an exorcism.
I also want to add that the woman was observed for literal years before the Catholic Church granted permission to perform the exorcism.
Oh my God.
Many doctors had this case in charge for years, and the woman was examined by the best specialists in the profession, but their thorough tests and exams resulted in the unanimous conclusion she was normal in the medical sense, psychologically and physically. She was normal.
Okay.
Throughout the years of observation by the Catholic Church, the reasons they were granted permission for the exorcism were the usual shit. One, she understood languages which she had never heard or read, including Latin and German. This is 1928 Iowa.
Wow. Most the wrong way.
When the priest spoke the language of the church and blessed her in the Latin tongue, not only did she understand it all, she also foamed at the mouth and became enraged. She was acutely aware of when someone sprinkled holy water on her body and not regular tap water, with no way of her knowing which was which.
Jeez. Oh my gosh.
So those were the reasons, after years of observation, that the Catholic Church finally granted permission for the exorcism. So a little backstory on the woman herself before we get into the month-long exorcism that took place.
So long, I'd be like, when is this over? Yeah.
So she's called Anna Eklund for the sake of the story. She was born in the Midwest around 1882. Obviously, we can't look up exactly what year she was born because we don't even know her actual name.
Right.
It's been protected by the church ever since. And I actually think she was from Wisconsin because that's where Father Theo is from.
Okay.
And
oh yeah, guy. Father Theo.
No. Yeah, Father Theo. It's like
oh, my boy.
Theosophilus yeah. or something, but okay. I'm gonna call him Theo okay. or
he's definitely
Father
Theo.
T.
Father T.
Father T.
T.
I like here. That.
She was raised a devout Catholic. Her mother was Catholic. She first began showing symptoms of possession at age 14. She had revulsions towards holy objects, inability to enter church, disturbing thoughts about unspeakable sexual acts. She became fully possessed in 1908. Father Father Theo, who I mentioned earlier, successfully exorcised her on June 18th, 1912. And then 16 years later in 1928, when she was 40-something, they had to do it again. So
wow.
This time, Father Theo actually wanted to get her out of her hometown to perform the ceremony, away from like her home. Mm-hmm. So he went to his old friend, Joseph Steiger, who was a parish priest in Erling, Iowa, and asked him if the exorcism could take place there. And Father Steiger said, hell no, and like flipped his hair and snapped his fingers. And then Father Theo was like, please. And then like Father Steiger was like, fine.
And that's literally what happened. Like, wow. Oh my God, fine.
Word for word,
just do
the conversation.
That's a great convo.
So he agreed to allowing the exorcism to take place in the nearby convent of the Franciscan sisters. Anna arrived on August 17th, 1928, and trouble started immediately. First of all, Father Theo had arranged to take the train and be picked up by Father Joseph. And Father Joseph had major car troubles going to pick him up, despite his car being brand new and in tip-top shape. He had, like, pedal to the metal and was going, like, 10 miles an hour all the way to the train station.
Oh, my
he
God.
He could not get his car to, like,
creepy.
Drive.
It sounds like what the Warrens went through.
Exactly. The Warrens actually talk about this case in The Demonologist very briefly, but they talk about it.
Oh, do they?
A little bit,
interesting.
Yeah. Interesting. It's not even like part of
don't
the
even
stories.
Remember that.
They just reference this exorcism. Okay. They don't say her name or anything. They just say an exorcism that took place in Iowa in 1928.
Gotcha.
So, of course, he had never, Joseph, Father Joseph, who was allowing him to use his parish, had never performed an exorcism before, but Theo had. So when he got there and was late, he was like profusely apologizing, trying to tell him it was his car, and Father Theo was just laughing and was like, I'm surprised you even made it here.
Yeah.
And he was like, don't be surprised if this isn't the first thing to go wrong while we do this, which is fucking ominous.
Yep.
Like, yep.
Oh my gosh, what is about to
like, excuse me, you're using my home.
Right.
So also before the ceremony really began, some of the nuns, so they tried to keep this like as quiet as possible. They let like six nuns know, two priests, one of them being Father Joseph and Father Theo. And the only other people that knew that this was happening were the two men that were in charge of the like the two conductors of the train that brought Anna. Mm-hmm. Because they wanted them to understand what was happening in case something went wrong on the train.
Yeah.
Those were the only people that knew about this.
So like
it was kept very
town,
secret. Yeah, pretty yeah. much. Yeah. Early
the
Iowa,
whole
there were eight people there and seven of them knew about this. So some of the nuns who knew what was going on attempted to secretly sprinkle holy water on Anna's food. This was before the exorcism even began. And she was just like staying in a room. And when it was presented to her, Anna threw a fit. She was purring and lowly growling like a cat. And she refused to eat until unblessed food was served. After that, she always knew whether one of the nuns had tried to bless the food or drink. And the voices coming from her always complained.
Jeez.
Like without,
yikes.
They prepared the food in another room. There's
right.
no way
how does
she could have known.
How does she know? That's creepy.
So the exorcism started off with a fucking bang. Anna was placed on the mattress of the old iron bed in an unused room of the convent. She was being held down by six nuns and bound by her hands and feet. As soon as the prayers of the church were begun, Anna slipped into unconsciousness and remained there for the entirety of her exorcism.
Oh.
They
so
did
like
not
23 days?
For 23 days. Well, yeah. They did not hear from Anna for 23 days during exorcism. When they were done for the day and before they began the next day, she went back to herself.
Okay.
She didn't remember anything that happened during the rites of the exorcism. She would just wake up like very tired and sore and sick.
Wow.
But she didn't remember anything that happened
had
when they
no
were
clue.
Performing the rites.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
It should also be noted that the per the priest and witness testimony, all of the voices, screams, and sounds that came from her during the exorcism came from her throat. Mm. She either had her mouth closed or open, but her lips were not moving the entire time of the exorcism.
That
so voices came from her,
up.
But oh. According to the witnesses, she didn't actually say anything.
Oh, my
so
gosh.
That makes me want to die. So six nuns were holding her down. Restraints are tight. Father Theo had barely begun the formula of exorcism in the name of the Blessed Trinity, in the name of the Father and the Son, the Holy Ghost, the name of the crucified Savior. When all the fucking sudden, what they described as lightning speed, Anna went from being flat on the bed, restrained, to halfway across the room on top of the
no.
door.
Shut up.
She like all of a sudden was on top of the door.
Oh my gosh. Holy buckets.
She was like gripping the door with one hand and then she had her foot on the door and then she had her hand and her other foot on the wall. And she was just, she wasn't growling. She wasn't making any sound. She was looking directly at them completely still.
Can you imagine that?
It, they said it was like she was
all like,
yeah,
I know.
They said Father, that it was like she was defying gravity. She just all of a sudden was on top of the door and just like staring
whoa.
At them completely still. It took five
that's
people to pull her down and strap her back to the bed. Once they began again, a loud, shrill scream filled the room. The noise was deafening, but at the same time sounded like it was coming from far off in the distance. Then all at once, what sounded like a pack of beasts or hyenas started to come from Anna, from her throat.
Gross.
It was so loud that despite the closed windows and doors, half of the neighborhood came out to find out what the fuck was going on, and their secret was not so secret anymore. Literally within the first night, half the town knew that something fucking weird was going on at this convent. Man. So this part gets pretty gross. If you've seen The Exorcist, you kind of know what I'm talking about. Right away, Anna, despite literally refusing to eat or drink almost anything in 23 days, began frothing and spitting and vomiting and urinating and defecating an insane amount.
Jeez.
Father Theo says that this happens during an exorcism to try and ward off the influence of the exorcist. Like, if the exorcist is also throwing up, he can't very well perform the rites of exorcism. Right. Like, if he's sick or revolted, he can't do his job.
So it's to gross him
out. So it's essentially to make him not do a good job or to quit, give up.
Yeah.
That's what the throwing up and the shitting
and everything.
What an aggressive
way.
So at times, the outpouring of vomit, piss, and shit would fill entire large buckets from this woman.
That is horrible.
At one point, the emissions was a bowl full of matter resembling vomited macaroni.
Okay, well.
And at other time, having the appearance and texture of sliced and chewed tobacco leaves.
From leaves now, I'm going to head on out.
I can't hear another moment.
That's all the time we have this week for Keep It. No. From 10 to 20 times a day, she vomited, even though the most she had taken food-wise was a teaspoon of water or milk that morning, because she refused to eat.
That's insane.
Other crazy shit that was documented during this month. Anna exhibited inhuman strength. Again, this girl was not eating. She was vomiting 20 times a day, and it would still take 4 to 6 nuns to hold her down. And they even said in the pamphlet, this is all from the priest.
This is what you can get from the
pastors
download.
And the nuns. Yeah, this is all from this pamphlet. I didn't get any information from anywhere else.
Wow.
Sorry, what year was this again?
This was 1928 in Iowa.
Okay.
So
I was like, are any of those people still alive?
Barely.
Maybe barely.
I know Father Theo isn't. He died in the 70s.
But I guess they were older, and I was thinking, yeah.
Father Theo was born in like 18 something.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah.
They even said in the document that they got like some of the heftier nuns, like some of the stronger nuns.
And she should have been so weak at this point.
She should. First of all, she was like a 40-year-old woman. It didn't say how big she was, but like she still 40-year-old like normal sized woman. Yeah. It takes six people to hold her down.
I'm like imagining these like six like petite little nuns holding her down.
No, these were buff ass nuns.
They got their hefty nuns.
Hulk Hogan nuns.
They got their muscular ladies.
Yep. She supposedly levitated from her bed.
Yeah.
Her head, this is awful, her head physically elongated and swelled at certain times.
What?
At one point, her lips supposedly grew to the size of her hands.
Oh my gosh.
Her body would also expand to the point of severe bloating, to where it appeared she was almost double her normal size, and then retract and she'd return to normal.
Okay.
She exhibited signs of what the Catholic Church calls possessed gravity, essentially a pulling towards the ground. At one point, she was lying in bed and became so heavy, the bed sank and the iron bed frame was considerably bent. So she actually, like, sank through the mattress and, like, the bed frame started to bend down because she was being pulled so far.
And so all of this is, like, happening over the 23 days.
This all happened over 23 days, of the exorcism. And it happened as soon as they started.
Did, like, anyone ever just, like, let's just take a break and, like...
They would break for, like, the night. You know, they would go to bed. There was one point, I'll get to it, where they did it for 3 days straight without stopping.
But
I'll get to that point. This is crazy. Anna would obviously attempt to physically assault, but she would also verbally assault the nuns and priests that were present by reciting sins they had committed in their childhoods. Mm. The priests and nuns affected all conclude there is absolutely no way she could have known, and in some cases, they themselves had even forgot about
them. Shut up.
In fact, she said something super interesting at one point. Father Theo asked her why she was retelling sins from childhood and not more recent sins, and she said, "We can't see those." And he said, "Why?" And she said, "Because they've been absolved." So essentially, she said that if a sin is confessed, the demons have no way of knowing about them, which is fucking insane.
That is that there is actually crazy. Something to the Catholic religion? Right? In confessing sins, I had to do that their all sins, the demon,
yeah.
All through my youth.
The demons can't.
Yikes, I better apologize for my sins.
I need to go to confession.
Well, the thing is, I don't even know if it's a Catholic thing, because even, you know, the Catholics do confession, right. But, you know, even Lutherans you get absolved of your sins
right.
by
There's
going
lots
through
of
yeah yeah it's yeah. You do it in every religion, whether it's through prayer or even sure. if you are, say, not religious at all, you could still be influenced by, you know, if demons and angels exist, you could still be influenced by them even if you're not religious. So, say, not necessarily being absolved of your sins, but admitting that you sinned.
Yeah.
To yourself.
Being able to own up to it.
Being able to own up to
the
sin, being able to apologize for the sin, or being able to, like, realize,
making it,
like,
right with someone.
Exactly. Yeah, even if it's yourself. Even in that case, it could be essentially that you've absolved yourself and the demons can't hold it against you, or they can't even see that it existed.
Sure. That's very true.
So for the rest of this, because there's a lot of talk coming from the demons, I'm going to say some stuff that is heavy on the religious side, and I'm just retelling what this entity said.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily that I'm like, they were demons for sure. There's no doubt about it, but I'm just going to kind of, because now it's getting into, like, the real, like, demon god stuff. Mm-hmm. Something that's always important to an exorcism, figuring out who is in the body of the
asking its name, right?
Person, yeah. Much like Annelise Mikkel in Germany, which was Exorcism of Emily Rose, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Anna was possessed by demonic entities as well as real people. There were a ton of entities that spoke and screamed and spat from her, but most of them were what Father Theo called brat demons. Mm. Very lower level demons. Didn't even have a name. Just like demons.
Just a brat.
Yeah.
But five main perpetrators inside of her that named themselves were Lucifer, Beelzebub, Judas, her father Jacob, and her aunt Mina. Now, all of this information comes from Anna during the exorcism, so you can take it with a grain of salt. Judas, it was revealed, was only there because his assignment was to tempt Anna into committing the unforgivable act of suicide so that they could solidify the ownership of her soul. Jacob, the girl's father, was condemned to hell because he cursed his daughter to be defiled by demons because she would not commit incest with him as a child.
Oh my gosh. Horrible.
We do not know if he was successful in molesting or raping her because Anna never spoke of it. But once in hell, according to him, speaking through Anna, once in hell, the devil allowed him to enter his daughter and continue the torture of her.
God.
She never spoke of it outside of the exorcism, so they don't know if he actually was successful in molesting or raping her.
That's horrible. That's so bad.
Now, Beelzebub, I did some research on this. Actually, I was showing them this before. My mom got me this book. It's the Encyclopedia of Demons and Demonology, and I looked this up because when it was saying Lucifer and Beelzebub were in here, I always thought Beelzebub was Satan, but he's not.
I don't know. Oh,
I always thought he was. I thought that was another name for Lucifer himself, mm-hmm. but it's not. Beelzebub is actually the prince of demons, or at least he was at the time of Jesus. I don't know where he stands now. Maybe he's just
where,
like,
he's at.
A jester. I don't know. But
a jester.
This is actually crazy. The Pharisees actually accused Jesus of exorcising demons in Beelzebub's name because, according to Holy Scriptures, including the Bible, the power to expel unclean spirits was actually gained through pacts with demons.
Hmm.
So this is told in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Beelzebub claims that he causes men to worship demons, arouses sexual desires in holy men and priests, causes wars, instigates murders, and arouses jealousy. So actually, in the Bible, it basically says that Jesus himself made a deal with the prince of demons, Beelzebub. Some sort of exchange was made in order to allow Jesus to be able to pull demons from people.
Hmm. Wow.
Which is bonkers.
Yeah.
So Satan is allowing Beelzebub to pull.
I don't know if Beelzebub was allowed to make this pact with Jesus, but he did it.
He just did. I was never the whole time we've been talking about him, I've been thinking of the lyrics to Bohemian Rhapsody. Beelzebub has the devil put aside for. Anyway.
Oh, Lauren.
That's where I got all my information.
I've been going over the lyrics. Like, did that song tell us anything? It didn't.
It didn't.
No.
It did not, sure even didn't. A little bit.
So Mina, let me move this around. Mina was Anna's aunt by blood, but she was also her father Jacob's mistress. She was condemned to hell for leading a prolonged immoral life with Jacob while his wife was still alive. She had also committed child murder.
Great.
She supposedly killed up to 4 children in her lifetime. So that's enough to get you a one-way ticket to H.E. Double Hockey Sticks, if you ask me.
Sure will.
She was also accused of witchcraft in her life.
Oh.
And it was found out after the exorcism that not only was she accused of witchcraft, but she tried to poison Anna at one point.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if
poor
it was...
Poor Anna.
Anna had a horrible life.
Yeah. So my one thought on, like, her dad was, like, casting demons on her because of, like, incest or whatever. But would it still happen if, like, it did happen to her? You know what I mean? Like, my thought is...
Like, if he was actually successful in
right, like, if he wasn't successful, then, of course, the demons are on her or in her. Mm-hmm. But if he was successful, my thought is, like, but then how did the demons get in her?
Well,
unless it was just, like, you're cursed.
Maybe
no
it wouldn't
what.
Have happened.
Yeah.
Apparently, was, like, backtracking a little
Mina
bit,
was accused of witchcraft during her life. She also killed four of her children, supposedly. It was confirmed that she had killed her children. I don't know how many, but during the exorcism, she was, like... She said something about child murder, and the priest was like, how many children did you murder? And she was like, 3. No, 4.
Oh,
like, she
God.
Was very excited about it. So
to say the 4th.
Disgusting.
Ooh.
The thing is, so I don't know if they cursed her, like, in life.
Right.
They actually, like, did a ceremony to, like, put a curse on her.
Right.
It's also, you know, I'll talk about this later, like, she could have just been suffering from... horrible, horrible PTSD.
Right.
Yeah.
Doesn't explain a lot of the stuff that happened.
No,
but
it doesn't explain it all away, but
right.
could definitely
you know.
Be there.
Yeah. If she was
what a life.
Raped and molested by her right. own father and her aunt and,
right.
you know, convinced that these horrible, horrible images that come into her brain all the time are demons
right.
and not personal demons, like mm-hmm. actual physical demons.
Yep.
I don't know.
It's crazy.
It's something.
So, some things that were kind of crazy that leads me to believe that something demonic was going on. No matter what language Father Theo was speaking to her in, she understood and answered back fluent in that language. Now, again, this is Iowa in 1928.
Right.
It wouldn't surprise me if you told me she couldn't read and write.
Yeah.
So the fact that she knew German, she knew Latin, and she knew something that was called the language of the church, which apparently is separate from Latin, but I don't know what it's supposed to be. I think it's just ecclesiastical Latin, which is Latin that's only used in the church.
I mean, go Father T. He knew all those languages.
Father T knew all of them.
Father T is so smart.
Father T knew all of them.
What a genius.
Father T, I bet he was handsome too.
But he was from Wisconsin, right? You said? Or was that a different story?
Oh, well,
he a cheesehead?
He lived in Wisconsin. He was a Capuchin monk, and he was actually from... I don't remember where he's from, but he's foreign.
Oh,
okay.
He's
so he's not from Wisconsin. All right. So I'm into
but he
it.
Lives in he lived in practice and eventually died in Wisconsin, I believe.
Okay.
So not a full cheesehead.
But again, like, she knew German. This was before World War II.
Yeah.
And this was
right.
the year before the Great Depression officially started. Like, there's no reason she would know German.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
this is just
Latin
crazy.
And ecclesiastical Latin. fluently.
This is bizarre.
The thing is it was so fluent. She could speak Latin so well that she or whomever Father Theo was talking to at the time would literally cackle and berate him when he would stumble across, like when he would stumble through the text and mispronounce words. Mm. Like if he was doing the exorcism for a long day and got tired and like mispronounced something, she would be like, "Oh, is that how it's pronounced? Because I thought it was this."
Oh my gosh,
that would just enrage me.
I know,
little
you. Yellow bastard. Bitch. And the thing is, you have to remember, this is a 40-year-old. This isn't, you know, it's not right. Like The Exorcist where it's a 12-year-old girl. Like, this is a 40-year-old woman, but still. As I said earlier, Anna would always know when someone had tried to bless her food or drink before they fed her, even though they would do it in the kitchen, which was nowhere near her room.
Mm-hmm.
They tried to trick her several times, actually. They tried to catch her in a lie. At one point, the priest wrote a prayer in Latin on a piece of paper and put it on her forehead. Anna, as well as all the priests and nuns in the room, were under the impression that it was a real prayer. But it turns out it was fake. It was like a quote from Shakespeare.
Oh.
But when he placed it on her head, she did nothing but laugh a deep laugh. Turns out it was fake. It wasn't real. When they put the real prayer on her head, and she didn't know, like I said, but when he put it on her head, she just laughed and laughed and laughed. When he put the real prayer on her head, her face and belly swelled up like a balloon and turned, what he said, red as a burning coal. And Father Theo had to remove it from her because he was literally afraid her body was going to burst open.
Jesus.
Wow.
From this an actual such a real crazy prayer.
From like a tiny piece of paper with a prayer written on it that was placed on her forehead.
Jesus.
She didn't know what it said or anything.
Wow.
At one point, this is crazy. At one point, a priest grabbed a crucifix from the church to bring in for protection, and Anna laughed and laughed and said, "I'm sorry. Since when did he die on a paper cross? If my knowledge doesn't fail me, he was nailed to a wooden cross." The crucifix was examined more closely, and it was found that it was not made of wood as the priest had assumed. It was paper mache.
Oh.
She knew this from across the room. As soon as he walked in with it, she laughed and was like, "I'm sorry."
Smartass.
Yeah, no. She was like the what shit that she sassafras. Said to him was like terrifying. Dang. Like, I'm sorry, was Jesus
excuse
well
me?
She wouldn't say Jesus's name either. The thing is, this thing like hated Jesus, which obviously makes sense, but I'll get to that too. Swarms of flies and even mosquitoes. This was December in Iowa. Swarms of flies and mosquitoes would descend upon the parish and disappear in an instant. And this is where I was going. The conversations with Judas were the most interesting. And when I mentioned to Joe that one of the demons she claimed was inside of her, or one of the voices that came out of her claimed it was Judas, he was like, "I don't believe that." But throughout history, some of the most prolific and like well-known exorcisms that have taken place, Judas has been
A common name.
And like I said earlier, when Judas claimed that he was there to tempt her into committing suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Judas is like, if you know, there's patron saints, if there are patron demons, I've learned from this, Judas is actually basically the patron demon of suicides.
Wow.
So if it would make sense that if demonic possession was real and demons actually did possess people, it would make a lot of sense for the patron saint of suicide to be there as well during these demonic possessions.
Yeah.
Because if, according to the Catholic Church, according to, you know, a lot of religions, if you commit suicide, your soul goes to hell.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to torture this soul on earth, defy God, and also take the soul to hell forever.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that Judas would be there during demonic possessions if you're thinking of them as a real thing. So the conversations with Judas were insane. He actually sounded like he gave genuine answers and was tortured by his past. It was really interesting. Like at one point, Judas was asked what he was doing here, and he answered by saying he was sent to make her commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And Father Theo asked, "Is it then a fact that everyone that commits suicide goes to hell?" And Judas said, "Rather not." And Theo said, "Why not?" And Judas answered, "We devils are the ones that urge them to commit suicide, to hang themselves, just as I did myself." Theo asked him, "Do you not regret that you have committed such a despicable deed?" To which Judas responded by cursing and saying, "Let me alone. Don't bother me with your fake God. It was my own fault." And then quit talking. Mm. So Judas was essentially saying that it's not necessarily true that everyone that commits suicide goes to hell, because the demons themselves occasionally push the person into doing it, and therefore it's not their fault.
Yeah.
He hated Jesus. At one point, he made fun of another cross they presented to him and said, "Were not the feet of Jesus nailed one on top of one another and not aside from one another?" And this is an argument that's been had for years and years and years and years throughout all religions, whether or not when Jesus was crucified, his feet hung like this, or they were crossed over each other, right, or they were right over left, or left over right.
Right.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing.
It's such a big thing.
But Judas, in this instance, claimed that they were crossed and not side by side. At one point, Judas said to Father Theo, "It would have been better if the man had never been born," referring to Jesus, which is something interesting because Jesus said that about Judas in the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it was interesting that during this exorcism, Judas said the exact same thing about Jesus. Anyways,
funny.
So Pastor Joseph had a pretty shitty times ahead too. He started to hate Father Theo. Pastor Joseph is the one, this was his parish.
Yeah.
He started to like resent him and hate him. He started having horrible feelings towards him. He finally told Father Theo how he felt, and Father T didn't even bat an eye. He did tell him if he's feeling these things to be careful, because he didn't bat an eye because he knew he's performed X amount of exorcisms before. He knew that this was something was working against him to make him want them to stop the rite of exorcism, to leave the parish. So he wasn't surprised at all. And he said, "If this is working towards you, if you're starting to hate me, you need to watch your back because something's working on you." The pastor then, one day, very soon after this conversation, had to go give the Blessed Sacrament to an older dying man on the edge of town. And afterwards, when he was on the road again, a road he's traveled a billion times, and he was driving super carefully because his car was brand new and because the last week and a half was fucking terrifying in every way and his life had been threatened. He said he prayed to his guardian angel and to Saint Joseph, his patron saint, the whole way home. He said a dark cloud appeared before him. It came just as he was about to pass a bridge over a deep ravine. The dark fog was so thick, he said it was like wearing a blindfold. He ended up going off the road and crashed into the railing of the bridge. He said his car accelerated right before the impact, too.
Oh, gosh.
Apparently, when he got back to the parish, no one had been told about the automobile accident. He heard laughing from Anna's room. And Anna asked him when he entered, "How about your new auto? It serves you right."
No.
She knew before
had even said it.
Pastor Theo turned around and asked, "Is this true?" And Pastor Joseph said, "Yes, it's true. My car is a complete wreck. But I was not harmed personally," to which the devil quickly replied, "Our plans were thwarted."
Oh,
so the fact that he was, can you imagine hearing that? The fact that he was praying to his guardian angel the whole way home, like his, our plans were thwarted, as in
they were
to do it because you were praying.
Successfully kill you.
Multiple times after the devil gleefully reminded the pastor several times of the car accident and warned him to be ready for a whole lot more fun. So
great.
The pastor, the nuns, and Father Theo were all tormented even when they weren't performing the rites. They claimed they were kept up at all hours of the night by scratching sounds. At first, they thought there was a rodent infestation. The scratching came from all over inside the walls and kept them up or woke them up at all hours of the night. Pounding on the walls did nothing. Most of the time, it made the sounds worse. They claimed the only thing that would stop the scratching sound was prayer.
How do you even sleep at night? It'd be like, ugh, no.
I would be able to get no rest with this going on.
I think they were just so exhausted that they would just pass out. Ugh. Apparently, Father Theo was described as having aged 20 years and 3 weeks. At one point, he went, this is what I was talking about earlier, he went for 3 days straight without stopping. When they finally ended, Father Theo collapsed, exhausted, and Anna just laughed. She was fine.
My gosh.
The last thing I want to talk about in terms of this exorcism is something, some of the interesting things that she had to say about the end times. According to the devil, I'm referring to her as the devil at this point because yep, Anna's right, not there anymore.
Right.
Whoever is not her.
Whoever right, has taken over.
So, according to the devil, the first coming of the Antichrist was already born and was in Palestine. He said that he is still young and must first grow up to be incognito before his power can become known. But there was no further explanation of what the first coming of the Antichrist meant. Yeah. As in, right, like, there's multiple
right, yeah,
incarnations.
There going to be multiples of this?
Yeah. But there was talk at one point of a false prophet that will arise who in reality will be Lucifer himself and will perform miracles and tremendous feats of healing. He will have the answer to all of our problems and will be worshipped almost as a god. This would be during the same time the Antichrist, one of the incarnations of the Antichrist, will be present on Earth. The devil also stated the beginning of the end would happen in 2001.
Well,
that the 20th century would be the last century written in history books. The fact that the exact quote was something like, "How can you banish me to hell? We have far too much work to prepare the way for the Antichrist. We know a lot. We read the sign of the times. This is the last century. When people will write the year 2001, the end will be at hand."
Interesting.
They also that's mentioned creepy, a mess in Mexico that was either past, present, or future. They took credit for the mess in Mexico, but they never said, what they said, was, we created the mess in Mexico. And they said, you know, it should be a lot of fun for him, talking about God.
Right.
Okay. What's that about?
Reading this, I could see why people get crazy biblical conspiracy theories every 3 or 4 years, because listening to this report from 1928, so we've got a supposed demon saying that the end of time, the end of the end, basically will begin in 2001, which right, was 9/11,
mm-hmm,
which was basically the begin. It began the rise to the peak of intolerance for other religions and other in general with mm-hmm, our hatred for like yeah, our blind hatred, hatred for the Muslims, unknown.
Like, right. Different. Yeah.
Right.
I know. That's very true.
Then we've got a man who is a false prophet promising to answer all of our problems and being worshipped almost as a god. Think about how Trump is treated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like
he is worshipped.
He literally
like a god,
said I could shoot someone in the street and still be elected president. Yeah. And that's 100% true. He's treated so, like he's untouchable. Because he is untouchable. Yeah.
It's the people that love
somehow,
him.
Oh, I still don't understand, him, but that's another topic.
That's another yeah, topic. Yeah.
For another day.
And we're reminded that nothing he does will be bad enough to cause like him getting kicked out of office. Yep. He continuously right, does things that are mm-hmm, impeachable and he won't get impeached.
Yeah.
And then you've got a mess in Mexico and the devils and demons supposedly orchestrated this mess in Mexico. And that's all they said about it, really, is that they created right, this
that's
mess
what
in Mexico.
I'm most curious about.
But the thing is it could have been about.
Yeah.
Yeah. It could have been about the assassination of Pancho Villa in 1923, which was 5 years mm-hmm, earlier.
True.
Or it could have been about 1985 when 10,000 people were killed during the earthquake in Mexico City. Or it could have like gone way in the past in 1846, the Mexican-American War. Like, we don't
yeah,
know.
We don't know.
Or it could be talking about right, right now with drug cartels
yeah,
and the murdered women in yeah, Juarez.
People so crossing the border.
The border yeah, situation. Yeah, border like, control, what is the yeah, mess
this
in Mexico?
This is starting to freak me out.
It's a little fucking scary.
Yeah.
It is.
And the fact that they said
feels
2001.
Feels a little on the nose. I don't like it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can see totally how someone could read this and be like, "Well, this is it.
Yep,
that's
this
the end.
Is the end
this
of
is
time."
What they talked
I was
about,
feeling totally fine because I was like, "All these things are in the past," but now that you've connected to the yeah, present,
connected they were, to the
they
actual
were predicting
present,
everything.
So finally, the devil started to wane after 23 days. The demons started to beg to be left alone instead of, you know, instead of cursing and spitting, they were moaning in agony. And on December 23rd, 1928, about 9 p.m., after around 7 hours straight with a rite of exorcism, Anna, with a sudden jerk, broke free of her restraints, and the men and women holding her down and stood erect before them. Only her heels were touching the bed, and fucking barely, according to the people that were in the room. There were 8 people in the room at the time. They literally thought she was going to shoot up through the ceiling. Like, they grabbed onto her clothes as she, like, shot up because they thought she was just going to, like, pew!
Go
like,
right go up into the sky.
Yeah.
But instead, they all pulled on her to try to get her to lay back down. Father Theo yelled, "Depart, ye fiends of hell. Begone, Satan. The Lion of Judah reigns." At that moment, her body gave way and she fell upon the bed. Then a piercing scream filled the room and voices saying, "Beelzebub, Judas, Jacob, Mina. Beelzebub, Judas, Jacob, Mina," could be heard over and over until they faded away. Anna laid so peacefully they actually thought she died. But she eventually woke up and smiled and cried and thanked everyone there. But all the windows and doors had to be open and the witnesses had to leave because of the absolutely horrible odor that filled the entire convent.
I'm sure.
Every single nun left the parish that year.
I would leave all of in a them. Heartbeat.
Wow. Yeah. They all yeah. left.
How do you continue on after that? They all relocated.
I think that this is a sad story regardless, whether it was a true demonic possession or a woman who is sexually and physically abused so badly that even after the death of her abusers, she was still tormented by them. Mm-hmm. And you think about the way adrenaline works. You think about PTSD. Obviously, like the voices coming from her throat and like the weird, like the way that she knew about like the nuns and the priest's sins from their childhood, like all that's insane. Yeah. But just the physical stuff, you think about the like when your child's trapped under a car and you're able to lift an entire car, like if she's literally having these PTSD episodes and her adrenaline's running, she could technically overpower possibly six nuns.
Yeah, it's not impossible to dream up that this is all a result of, you know, things that are going on with her mentally.
Yeah.
I just think we still have a few unexplained, very mysterious things where you're like, I don't know if this is fully her PTSD.
Knowing different languages, sure. Yeah. She could have learned, I guess. She could have learned different languages. But like,
but unlikely.
They claim she levitated. Yeah. The amount of vomit and shit and piss coming out that of her came body. Out of her
and
body.
And how that should have weakened her body a lot. Even with adrenaline, you would be so weak after letting
like
all that
five
out of your body.
Vials of blood today and I couldn't do shit for 3 hours.
Even the time she was like up against the door. Like,
yeah. How did she get over there so fast? How did she know about everyone's life? Those crazy things.
And the thing is, this account could be totally fabricated, but...
But there's several people talking about it.
Why would it be fabricated? Why would they make this up? They're not getting
anything out of
it. No motivation
for anyone. There was this no, wasn't no one a was time, fame and fortune.
Yeah, this wasn't a time in our history where people were running from God. People were running towards God, if anything. There was no reason to try and make people, to try and force people to believe in God again.
Yeah.
It's not like
this
now.
This was not needed.
yeah, this wasn't necessary. This was right, like I said, this was right before the Great Depression. People were going to God for everything.
Mm-hmm. The only silver lining is like I'm like, oh, good always trumps evil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? I want to believe.
Even if it does take you 23 days.
Even if it takes you 23 days. Well, the thing is, 23 days of exorcism. She'd been possessed since she was 14 years old. She was 40. Right.
That's
and
true.
And they had tried one other exorcism before.
They succeeded, apparently. They had a successful exorcism when she was 14, and then it came back. And when she was 14, her father and Mina were still alive.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't find any information on that, but
yeah,
the pamphlet is actually called "Begone, Satan" by Reverend Celestine Kapsner, and like I said, there's a foreword by a PhD named Virgil McKell. There's a letter from Dr. John Dundon, who is a surgeon, who starts by saying, "We wish to endorse your pamphlet as a potent aid to faith in the value of sacramentals, relics of the saints, and prayer." Basically, they tried to help her, and no doctors could. Yeah. And this was like the top surgeon. Yeah, and then it immediately goes into like what happened. A sensational expulsion of the devil, which occurred in Iowa in 1928.
Well, good Lord.
That's a
it's
crazy
pretty
story.
Crazy.
That is a bonkers story.
In Iowa.
I love that.
Wait, what was the town again?
Erling.
Like
instead of Iowa. Y, it's ING.
Oh, okay, because I was like, I know of an early Iowa. This is Erling.
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 Erling Hour.
I'll have to look it up.
I was going to say, I don't know where my phone is because I was going to look it up too. I actually didn't even look it up. Look up Erling, Iowa. Because you know how some towns like change their name? Because one of the things, the thing is like, you know, I've been talking for like 45, 50 minutes. Like I've been talking a long time about this. So I didn't want to go further into this. I didn't research, say, like, what is the convent now?
Yeah. What like, is it today? Turned into?
Is it still a convent? Is it still a church?
Is it something is else there that weird we can go stuff? Visit?
Yeah. Is anything lingering there? Is anything.
Could it be an abandoned building just sitting there now?
Right. But, like, you know, has anyone had any strange experiences there after this happened?
Right.
Like, the church or the hospital in St. Louis. With, again, the unnamed boy that the movie The Exorcist is based off of. They had weird shit happening there to this day. Even though the building is torn down where it happened, they still have weird shit happening there. So, like...
You know there has to be weird shit going on in this right? area. So, what
is there? Is it an empty field? Did you find it?
It's like southwest Iowa.
Okay. Is it tiny? Is it a tiny little town?
It is. Let me see.
Teensy tiny.
Oh, weird. Because it says Erling, but then it says Westphalia, Iowa. So maybe they did.
They probably changed their name.
Maybe they did change the name.
The population was 437 at the 2010 census.
Ooh, oh, wow.
My gosh.
Booming.
Talk about small.
That's crazy. Let me see it.
It did seem like when I was reading this account, it did seem like the town was basically made up of the convent.
Yeah.
Like there were people that lived there. It was almost like, what was that documentary? Wild, Wild Country.
Yeah.
It was almost like that town in Oregon where it was like, there's the cult and then there's like 50 other people.
And then there's
somewhere.
A couple other folks hanging around here. Yeah, it's like the convent
like
and then
the
a
church,
few houses over
then
to the right.
There's like, there's some people in town.
There's George over there.
Anyways, so that happened in Iowa. That's pretty much all the time we have this week.
Yeah, damn.
For Keep It Weird.
Iowa was such a surprise.
So crazy.
Who knew?
Had a whole lot of creepy shit going on.
Corn and
I mean, it's
spooks.
Like creepy, corn shit and in
spooks.
Small towns, you know? Just like...
True.
I never used to be afraid growing up on a farm. Mm-hmm. And now when I go home, I feel like maybe just moving to a big city, you're like more aware of like everything.
Well,
but now when I drive home, I'm like, who's going to pop out of the cornfield?
Yeah. I think that
terrifying.
Too in Illinois, I don't like the big
like
openness.
I'm all alone on a gravel road.
Yeah.
Like
that's what I used to love about my hometown murdered. Was how quiet and peaceful it was. Now that's what scares the shit out of me. I'm like,
I know.
I don't
Which
like
is funny
these old
sometimes
country roads.
I'm more scared in the dark alone on a gravel road driving home than I am walking in the streets of LA. Right.
I'm 100% more scared because the thing is, if I get attacked out on the road that my parents live on or at my parents' house, no one's gonna hear me scream.
Right. Nope. It's
no
so
one's gonna
isolated.
Call for help.
It's
no one is gonna
isolated.
Call 911. And Joe actually talked about that. I don't know if you listened to Joe's last minisode. We talked about all of the ghost stories we just had in our last listener ghost story episodes, and he talked about how he's lived in New York City, he's lived in Los Angeles, he's lived in Boston, and the most scared he's ever been is in the smallest town.
Yeah.
There's just something about it. And the thing is like, I was always comfortable growing up, and
it's
then
like
I moved to a city.
There,
yeah, maybe. Yeah. But like now when I go home, I have to have a nightlight.
Yeah.
I have to have like sleep
like
sounds.
The
everywhere.
Exact same way.
I hate
it's just
it.
Something that feels off about it.
It's so quiet. Ugh.
Yeah. It's
like,
overly
my
quiet.
My parents would like leave me home alone on the farm.
Yeah.
And like now I'm like, I'm not staying there. But
yeah,
I'm like,
where are you going?
Stay where are you going?
Take me with you.
Can I go on your errands?
30 years old and I'm like, take me with you.
Well, we're more aware. We're more cautious.
Interested in being here by myself.
We've seen the strangers. That was an isolated house. We know how these things end.
Very true.
Well, thanks for learning about Iowa, guys.
Thanks for getting us to learn about Iowa. I remember when she was like, we're gonna do Hometown Haunts Iowa. I was like, all right.
You're like, I'm not interested.
No, okay, I had no idea. Like I said before, I read about three very short stories about hauntings in Iowa. There are so many. The list went on and on when I was scrolling through the internet. Like there are some weird sightings going around that state.
Not a lot of monsters, though.
Yeah,
a lot of
sadly
demons.
No cryptids. Demons, a lot of ghosts, and some murderers. Mm-hmm. That's what we got.
And some murdies.
Murdies. Ghosties.
Anyways.
Yep.
Well, thank you for coming on again.
Thanks for having me. Care Bear. Loved having you.
Great to have you
back. We have a friend named Meredith, and she's Carrie, so we have Care Bear and Mare Bear.
Yep.
Just had to throw that out. That's the cutest thing I've ever
heard in my entire fucking life.
Care Bear signing off from Iowa.
Donde, Iowa.
Donde, Iowa. You and the one-liners tonight. You're nailing it.
This is obviously going to be called They Don't They Iowa, right?
Yeah, I was like, we don't even have to talk about the title. It's going to be Hometown Haunts, They Don't They Iowa.
The most Spanish-speaking state in the country, I think. Just kidding.
Yeah, that was a joke. And Carrie started to think about it.
Well,
no,
because I was like, I know Spanish, so.
Didn't you study abroad?
I did, yeah.
I know Spanish, but I did spend years in Spain, so maybe
it wasn't because of Iowa necessarily.
No, that's
Okay. So thank you for coming on. Thank you, weirdos, for listening to our show. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Keep It Weird Cast and our Facebook page, Keep It Weird. Check out our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/keepitweirdpodcast to find ways you can donate to the show and get a bi-weekly newsletter as well as a mini-sode with Handsome Joe after each topic that we cover on Keep It Weird. What else?
That's it.
Have a good life. Our next episode, here's the thing. We have a ton of recordings coming up. They're all kind of out of order. We have no idea what our next episode is going to be, but pretty soon we're going to be covering some urban legends, some spooky urban legends across the country. We're going to be covering some mysterious, like, unsolved mysteries. We're going to be talking about child killers, child murderers. We have a ton of shit coming up. So if you have any questions, comments, concerns, send them in. keepitweirder@gmail.com.
Pretty please.
Pretty please. Carrie, what's our sign off this week?
Oh.
I should have remembered this from last time.
I know.
I'm so sorry. Keep it weird, weirdos, and we'll see you soon.
I feel like that was the most Iowa sign off ever. Like a cute Midwestern girl. Yeah. Like, well, see you soon. Come back and see
us. Have a great day.
Have a really nice day.
The Midwestern heart on this girl.
You know what,
come visit us
in Iowa sometime.
Yeah, come. We're not all bad.
We ain't all bad.
No.
Come and see us. You did not paint
a really pretty picture of Iowa today, let me tell you.
Did not.
But it's fine.
Later, Gators.
No,
that's it. That's the sign up.
There it is.
Later, Gators.
Later, Gators.
And keep it weird.
Do you like your history haunted? Then you'll love Macabre London, a podcast hosted by me, Nikki Drews. Every fortnight, we uncover one of the forgotten stories of London's bloody past and get to the bottom of some more well-known gruesome tales. We've covered witchcraft in the form of the last witch trial held in World War II, found out what it was like to be a hangman in the Victorian times, and even dipped our toe into the paranormal by uncovering what really happened at the infamous Enfield Haunting. So if you're interested in learning the gory, spooky, and eerie history of the UK's capital city, then check out the show. You can find us on the Apple Podcasts app, Acast, and all other podcast providers by searching for Macabre London. That's M-A-C-A-B-R-E London.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.